This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 267 of Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. Depending on when you're listening to this or what day, I'll just say right now, it is June 5th. 2019, and we're building up to the 2019 conference for the National Emergency Number Association, for NENA, that's going to be in Orlando, Florida. And I posted episode 200, maybe 57, a couple days ago. And as you just heard, this is episode 267. So there's going to be a bunch of episodes. They're going to be coming out before this one. So I'm trying to think of ahead of time whenever you guys are going to listen to this. Either way, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be a good episode. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on, and I'm just excited for everything. I also just posted up an article that really had me in tears as I was typing it out. It's called "This Is Where It Begins." If you haven't had a chance to read that, please make sure to check it out. So it recaps my time in the beginning, because it all started at the National NENA Conference, and it's something that I will never forget. I'll never forget the people who helped me and who supported me and believed in what I was doing with this podcast. And it's just, it's a good article. Make sure to check it out. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the one who wrote it, but it's about just the story that follows the podcast and how it started in 2013, the national level that is, and now going back home to the NENA conference, to the podcast zone, and recording there with them. So very excited for all that that's going on. And this episode, as well as all the others, as always, is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And we're going to jump in. And my guest today is, we've met before and we've spoken a few times, but a mutual friend of ours, Ryan Dedman with the 911 Training Institute, push this a little bit further. And I think the way he put it in the email is, she's an exceptional 911 leader, and I have twisted her arm into making this introduction for the case to be on the show, which I thought was excellent. So my guest is Melissa, and she's the 911 director at the Roswell Police Department out of Georgia. How's it going?
It's going very well. Thank you. It was a very accurate description of Ryan and his and his gentle pushing. Yes.
Oh, I love that goof. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. He really is.
And I'm glad that we're doing this. Finally, got you on here, and we are going to learn a lot about you. So no pressure. Don't be nervous.
Oh, boy.
So
every time I've seen you at conferences, I'm like, come talk to me. I'm on the other way. And now here we are.
This is true.
It's kind of poetic.
This is exactly because oh man, when was the last time was it in Vegas at the APCO conference?
Yeah. APCO. Yep.
Yeah. And I was saying you should be on sometime. You're like, well, I don't know.
and then there's Ryan.
Yeah.
So enough said.
Yep. Thanks, man. So here we are. And we're going to go back in time and learn a little bit about you and what you're doing presently, because there's a lot of stuff that's been going on. I've been following you on social media. I've been seeing what's been going on with your dispatch center and, you know, the peer support group that you guys have started building through your work with the 911 Training Institute. But before we get to that, I want to know how you even got involved in 911 to begin with.
Wow. Well, way, way, way back in the day of paper and call cards. I like to tell people, and I'm sure people who have ever heard or sat in my classes before, or even my own dispatchers are so tired of hearing this story, but I think it's funny and I stick by it. So I like to say I started when I was 10. I'm in my 29th year. So But seriously, I started fresh out of high school when I was 18 and with the intent of becoming a police officer. And then I was in the center for a couple of years and I was of age to go to the academy. And I'm like, no way, no thank you. I'll stay in my nice climate controlled atmosphere and not just do one thing, but do it all. I mean, so I make a joke about that. But honestly, I was so fascinated with the job that I was super happy with being the behind the scenes and helping these responders with everything that they needed. So, and really kind of the rest is history, but I started training about 2 years into the job and honestly, I have never stopped. I absolutely love training. It's my favorite part of the job. I love teaching new dispatchers. And yeah, after I started here in Metro Atlanta, that's where I started my career. But I am originally from New York, born and raised. And so I went back home to New York in 96 and started there at the Orange County 911 Center. And that's really when the center first opened. So we were in there like when they ground the dirt in day one and left there after a little over 19 years. I left there as a training coordinator and came back to Metro Atlanta to take the director job here and run my own center. And I guess they say the rest is history.
So I have to ask because,
oh boy.
You know, you see the depiction of New Yorkers and such on TV, in the news, that people can be rude there. So I have to ask, what was it like to take calls in that area compared to in the just outside of Atlanta? I mean, was there a big difference or was it just kind of the same?
Well, it's different. Now, when I say New York, I mean, Orange County is on the border of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. So we were about an hour north of the city. So it's a little bit more rural, actually, than where I am right now.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't say that New Yorkers are notoriously rude. I mean, I think Southerners are just nicer, but that doesn't necessarily mean that New Yorkers are rude. It was just
right.
a different type of call. It was definitely a different type of caller. And it was just different. A lot of the ruralness there that I remember the first couple of 911 calls in Orange County, it was like, send a fire truck over to Joe's house. And it's like, what? I'm used to, you know, getting the address and the cross street. And so that was a bit of a change coming from Metro Atlanta up to New York. And then as New York, the area up there just expanded and got more and more proactive and innovative. And then coming back here and then bringing some of that stuff here, it was a great big circle for me in the business. It truly was.
So it was kind of the opposite then.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was.
Not what I expected to hear. So then when you first start out though, I mean, what was it like for you? I mean, was it overwhelming? I mean, you walk into the center and did you ever have a time where you got to actually sit in for a little bit first to kind of see everything and how it was going, listen to the traffic and all that stuff before you actually, started working on the floor, or how did that work out?
First, no, I never got a chance to sit in prior to, I mean, that was, you know, remember I was 10 years old.
That's right. Yeah. That's
it was
right.
Way back in the day.
I never really look over the console.
Yeah. Well, I'm short. Is that a short joke?
No.
Somebody put you up to that. But I did get that joke all the time too. I used to get that message. Used to get that message on the MCT all the time. How many phone books are you sitting on to look over the console?
Oh, that's messed up.
It was pleasantly overwhelming in the beginning. And I do remember a couple of things that jumped out at me from day one that I will never ever forget. One, I just had the best training officer ever. Mm-hmm. I will never ever forget him. He played some great practical jokes on me. He was so laid back and so relaxed and so knowledgeable. And I was just a sponge. I was just like, teach me more. I went on so many ride alongs with the officers just to learn. And it was great. And I do remember, I know when you had emailed me, you talked about some of the asking about my first call, if I ever remembered it. And, you know, I didn't until you asked me that question. And I do now, because And I know your little disclaimer before you start the podcast. So I hope people realize that as dispatchers, we do have some sick humor going on. So my very first call was a seizures patient, a patient who was having seizures, and they ultimately had died through no fault of our own. Of course, we did everything we could and, you know, so on and so forth. But my training officer, from there on out, they said, okay, you're inducted. You officially killed somebody. Now let's move on. And I was devastated at first. I'm like, what? Really? But it was all in good fun. It was all a joke. And I learned to, obviously, that's what we do.
Right. Exactly.
We have to have a sense of humor.
Exactly. You have to find some sort of humor like that. And it's not, you know, making fun of the situation or anything, but right. had you were, like you said, you were devastated at that time. And the person that was there with you in that dark humor had to say something to kind of snap you out of it because yeah. You know what, you've got another call that's going to be coming in and you have to be able to handle that. And you have to be able to focus on it. And I tell people, you know, about dark humor all the time, because I've said to them, you know, when you're giving CPR, when you're getting trained to do CPR, they tell you, think about the song Staying Alive, that it's the perfect rhythm for doing compressions. But on the other hand, Another One Bites the Dust is also the same rhythm for CPR. And that's just that dark humor that people have, that you kind of have to, you do have to have that. You have to have that thick skin. I always tell people that to be a dispatcher, you have to be, you have to have common sense and you have to be human. And being human is also having that dark humor, because you have to be able to get through or you're not going to make it through the job. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's very true. I never forgot that. And it really solidified the rest of my purpose for the rest of the career. Honestly, he had a great impression on me. I think that's why I loved training so much. Mm-hmm.
So then from there, you know, you take this call and you're continuing on, but what was it that really solidified the fact that this was the job for you? Was it a certain phone call? Was it maybe that trainer that you're talking about that really made the experience good for you? Or, I mean, what type of experience was it? I only ask because out of all of these episodes that I've done, there's always been one thing that someone brings up and they say, you know, this was what it really was, that I really caught the bug or really found my calling in 911.
I don't know that there was any one particular call that did it for me as far as that. There were so many. And I think part of what did it was, one, I mean, yes, my first training officer, he was absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And the family atmosphere that we had in the beginning was so comforting to know that we're all in this together. And I've seen that not just at that center, but in another center. I've seen that in centers across the country. I'm also an adjunct instructor for APCA, so I've taught across the country too. So I've seen so many toxic relationships inside centers. But I remember that very first time that I being in that center, we were just so connected with each other. You know, we shared in the negativity, and then we shared in the positivity, and we shared in the laughter and sarcasm. And even now today, that's still first group of people, we still keep in touch today with one another. I almost feel like it was a sorority or a fraternity or a mixture of both. That's kind of what solidified it for me, is that we were here for a purpose. And I've heard so many people say across the years that they don't like new candidates saying that, oh, I just want to help people, and they're, because they kind of felt like that was condescending or a stereotype, and it's so much more than that. Mm-hmm. Well, we can't judge what people's opinions of what their purpose is for the job. That's one thing. But number two, I always like to turn that into, our purpose is to have a positive effect on somebody's life. And that could be providing CPR instructions to the mom with the infant baby not breathing, or it can also be providing directions to the 18-year-old who's lost in the middle of nowhere because her GPS failed or she has no idea where she's going. It's still having some type of positive effect on them. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but I think more, it wasn't just one call in the beginning that said, this is it for me. I kind of knew the minute I walked in the door, even though my initial intention was to be a police officer, I knew those first couple of months that this was the job for me. And I do remember, I'm very close with my mom. She's my best friend. And I do remember having this conversation with my mom because she's always, you know, what she knows that I care deeply and, you know, but I take things to heart a lot. And I said to her, I said, I don't care if I come home every night crying because of the day I had or the calls that I listened to. I am determined to do this and I will grow that second skin. And so 29 years later, here I am.
You know, and I was going to ask you how many years you've been doing this now, and 29. That is amazing.
I try to take back that family atmosphere and create that here in the center that I'm now running. And I'm really happy to say that we are truly a family here. I mean, these dispatchers, they make it all happen. And I love being able to lead them. They make it super easy, first of all.
See, that's inspiring to hear, because I've been telling people have been asking me just offhanded and in conversations or whichever, this past year, really, in all the conferences that I've been going to, you know, people have asked, one question has been the same almost every time. And it is, you know, how do we stop the, or how do we fight the, staffing shortages? And all I keep saying is, you know, it starts at the top. It starts at the very top, where if you've got someone who is really about their people and is giving back to them and really just doing a lot of things, it starts at the top. It's gotta start there and then moves from there. And everything that you're saying, it proves my point, because you're working for them. You know, you're making it a better place for them, so they're not in a toxic environment. Excuse me. And the types of calls that they take are crazy, horrific calls. And you know that because you've been there. So you want to be able to help them out and just mental health, wellness, all of that and training. And that's great. Now going back a little bit from when you started and you've taken this call and all of that, what type of training were you getting during that time? Because you've got a 29-year career here. And what was the training like for you then compared to what it's like now? And, you know, we can even compare technology as well because of the fact that you started at 10 years old.
Thank you for continuing that fantasy of mine. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
well, what was super interesting is back in the beginning, we were using that first agency, we were utilizing AFCO's training program then. So you can imagine that. I mean, that was when they first came out with their CTO program. And so I remember having the daily observation reports. I remember being in a little a couple of weeks of classroom training before I got out on the floor. And yeah, doing the having certain phases. And so then when I went up to the center that we just opened up in New York, it was very different. We were just getting things off the ground, so we didn't have any solid training program at that point. We didn't create that until much, much later, and when we had some different leadership in. And so we brought in AFCO's training program again, and I brought AFCO's training program here to Roswell. And it's the training is so much more advanced now. I mean, AFCO has... I mean, they're in, the fifth edition of their CTO program. So that tells you that right now. They've expanded that. But then we take the training program here, and my training coordinator does so much more than what we require for our agency. I mean, last year, our CALEA report last year for training said that each dispatcher had 52 hours of training. She does monthly CDEs, and we do some healthy competition games between the shifts, all directed towards the protocols to kind of help us learn and all that stuff. Right now, she's working on another active shooter mock on the job training drill for our shifts. to work on that in light of what happened in Virginia Beach. So we try and take each of the stuff that also happens on a national level and take them and bring them here and try and learn from them and put them into different on-the-job scenarios here. Which is a lot more advanced than when we first started way back in, you know, when I was 10. So,
right.
But APCO is APCO. So we are so grateful for their solidness in their structure of their training program.
Now, what about the technology?
Oh,
how has a lot of that changed? Because there is a lot that has happened just in the last year.
Right. Technology is definitely... It's definitely advanced. I mean, I remember the days of call cards and long sheets, and I remember being so busy on a radio when I have call cards stacked up during a storm, and now, you know, switching to a CAD. I remember when we first went to a CAD system, it was a great experience. It was an interesting experience. And, of course, nobody likes change, so it was, you know, we definitely had some challenges.
Right.
But I feel like growing up with the technology, it's not as bad as perhaps somebody coming in new to the technology. And that's how I feel like most of us have done it. We've grown up with this technology.
Right.
So, and provided that it's presented accurately, and, you know, a little slow and full of explanation and education, I think that it won't be so intimidated. And of course, the next thing that we are waiting for is the video messaging. And I know I have a lot of dispatchers who are starting to stress over it a little bit about how they might feel over the video messaging. So, you know, we're trying to address that slowly with our peer support program and kind of talk them through it. And right now we just, you know what, let's not worry about tomorrow right now. We are working on it, but we will keep everybody in the loop as things progress. So.
Yeah, exactly. Cause there is a lot that is going to be coming in, and the stress and everything just from that alone. But before we get to that part, so just looking back at some of the calls that you've taken, you know, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of history that you have, many, many calls. Is there one call that really sticks out at all? One that sticks with you?
You know, Ryan asked me this recently for the Mental Health Awareness Month, mm-hmm. and I could not answer his question. I don't know if I can explain it well, if I can verbalize it correctly, but they're all with me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, and it weighs on me. It weighs on my heart. I don't say which one or any which one in particular, not because I'm feeling weak or trying to hide it, or I don't want to address it, but just because I can't put it into words. There were so many. There were officer-involved shootings. There were officer fatalities. There were infants. There, you know, children dying in a fire. There were so many. As I know so many 911 dispatchers feel the same thing across the country. It's just there, sort of hanging on us, and it doesn't hinder me. They fuel me. They motivate me to keep pressing on and keep making sure that these dispatchers are taken care of, so they don't feel. I mean, peer support was, you know, taboo many years ago for us. It just, or maybe not taboo, but just non-existent.
Right.
And so, not having to properly dealt with this stuff until many years later, I don't want that ever to happen to this team out here.
Yeah, definitely. So, and I would almost say that it was kind of taboo, that it wasn't something that you really talked about. It wasn't something that was out there. If you had a call like that or something, you suck it up and do what you got to do. You keep going, and no one really got it out there. But man, it is a new day, and people are talking and sharing stories. And you know, some people do have one specific call that really sticks with them, and other people are like the way you said it. There's so many calls there. It's all about managing it and using it in a way to fuel you to continue moving on in this industry, just like you've been doing, the way you said it. And it's been doing great. I mean, you guys are working with or have worked with the 911 Training Institute to build a peer support team for your department. There are a lot more departments out there that are starting to do the same thing because people are finally taking notice of the stress and the toll that it takes on these 911 dispatchers, taking these calls that can be horrific in nature. And, you know, you talk about video messaging and that's just going to make it worse. You know, when you're taking a call, as you know, your imagination can bring up something that's way worse than what is probably actually going on there. But you're working with what you're listening to and you're imagining all of it. So on that note, talking about a peer support team, you know, what were some of the things that you saw that, that you ended up kind of reaching out to the Institute and thought, you know, can you guys help us out with this peer support team? And then, you know, you're also kind of taking an approach here with nearby agencies, which I think is amazing. It's almost like a mutual aid type thing for a peer support network.
Thank you. it's a great story. But I will tell you, I'm going to pause there for a second. And I will tell you this. A couple of years ago, when we started the hashtag #IAM911 movement, well, pun intended, I was moved. I mean, to a serious degree. It was so amazing to see that change slowly happen over the industry. And the more I remember the very, I said the very first album, but I remember the first couple of photos that went into that album on your Facebook page. And I was just, It was just amazing. And then to see more and more and more and more. And then a couple of times I usually don't share, or at least then I didn't share a lot about my work on my Facebook page. And now I'm kind of in a different position now with the network with a lot more people. So I do, but back then I didn't. And I started to share some of the albums and just saying, if you ever want to know what our job is really about, just read some of these. And it affected so many of my family and friends who were not in the business. And they were just, wow, you know, you never talk about this stuff. And as I'm sure many 911 dispatchers out there, and yourself included, know that you can't always talk to others who are not in the business about it. Because, and it's not that there's anything wrong with that or anything wrong with them. It's just, they're just not going to quite grasp what you had put in that album, what people had shared with you on that album. And it was all there. And it was truly, I've just never seen such a change in the industry. And I really believe that you have a lot of credit to take for that, because that's what started it. So I took a lot of that information there. And when coming here to Roswell, there were a lot of things here that needed to be corrected or improved on. I shouldn't say corrected. There's nothing wrong, but it just needed to be improved on. And the dispatchers were really hungry for some change. And so, you know, taking some time to get to know everybody and listen to their concerns, and realizing also that the talent that I had out here and helping them trying to expand upon that talent was one thing that led us to where we are today. And so one of our supervisors also shares in my passion for peer support. And she's been doing this for 26 years, and she's seen and heard a lot as well. We had some great conversations about it. And when we sent her to one of the supervisory development courses, this was her project. And she wanted to start this project. She came to me, she started talking about it. She said, what do you think? We talked about, we had heard of Jim Marshall. And so she had done a little bit of research, and we've really been working on it ever since. And so she really needs to take a lot of credit for this, because this was her dream. And we just kind of together helped her move it forward. So I can't say enough about Jim and Ryan. Ryan and I, we met the first time at AFCO in Vegas. So, and after that, we just kept moving forward. The very first phone conversation that Terry and I, that's the supervisor I was telling you about, the very first conversation that Terry and I had with Jim, we were like, this man is just absolutely incredible. I mean, he is just the kindest, gentlest, smartest individual I think I know. And so we just knew and we felt that it was right, that the 911 Training Institute was the way to go. So we got the presentation together for the budget year, and we moved it forward and we pushed and we pushed and we pushed, and we got the approval for an increase in our budget to start these classes. And we said, this is important and this is what we need to do. And we talked about what all these calls were in the past, and we referenced the hashtag #IAM911 movement. And we also talked about the future and what's coming and what we're expecting of these dispatchers in the future. And the, also the fact that we let's just start this. Somebody has to start it. Let us just be the one. And I know that there are other agencies around who obviously have peer support, but we were very happy to partner with an agency, an organization that has the credentials that Jim has and the structure that they have for this program, and to say that we are certified peer supporters, certified by the 911 Training Institute. It just meant something. And so that was number one. And then when we actually hosted the classes, the very first class was the 8-hour peer power of peer support. And we made it a mandatory training class for all of our dispatchers. We wanted everybody to go through that class. And then we also had many agencies around us who came to the class. We hosted two classes. And we had a lot of wonderful responses from that class. Some of, maybe two of our dispatchers were a little hesitant, like, why do I have to take this class? And then to come to find out at the end of the day, they were like, I'm so glad I took this class. And that was all we needed to hear. So we're very happy to hear that. It was a huge success. And Terry started having meetings with other agencies. Cox County 911 has their own peer support program, and they have a wonderful individual over there heading up that program. And so we hooked up with him, and we called him into a meeting and a couple of our other surrounding agencies to explain what we wanted to do with the 911 Training Institute and how, you know, maybe we just don't make this a team, but we make this a network, right? Each agency has their own team, but yet we're calling ourselves the 911 Peer Support Network here in our area. And initially, and shame on us, because initially we were thinking, well, just our surrounding agencies. But then we had an agency who had attended the class, the Power of Peer Support class, who said, oh no, I want in. And they're a couple hours away from us. And then we had another agency up north who contacted up north, North Georgia, who had contacted us a couple of weeks ago and said, I need to know more. So then we had a phone conference with our state of Georgia 911 director and the 911 authority director. And so we explained to him what we were doing, not that we wanted or needed anything. We just wanted to let him know what we've done with the 911 Training Institute, what they have to offer, and how this is starting to take off, to say, you know, if somebody in South Georgia that we don't know about, if they need peer support, then you know that we have this available in the state. He was very happy to hear that. So it is just, it's just taken off. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful experience. So I will tell you this too. So then the second two classes that we hosted, that they offered, were actually 4-hour, the three people in our agency who are going to be actually certified as a peer support member. And then we had some of the agencies who are a part of our network were in that class. And I will tell you what I experienced. And I didn't attend the class. I showed up a couple of times to make an appearance and sit in the back of the room, but I just wanted them to have this experience. Mm-hmm. But what I saw afterwards was all of them connecting on Facebook, saying comments like, this is the most amazing experience of my life. I'm getting goosebumps. I'm getting a little choked up. This is the most amazing experience of my life. I am so happy that I met all of you. We are truly bonded. We are a family. I was truly overwhelmed to tears. It was absolutely amazing to see. And that was all Jim Marshall. I will tell everybody and anybody that the 911 Training Institute is the organization that needs to help you with your peer support program. I will tell anybody who listens.
Well, that is amazing.
And I'm not being paid by the 911 Training Institute. No, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
This is not a commercial for them, but
yeah, for sure. No, they do very, very good work. You know, the article that I mentioned way in the beginning, of this episode that I wrote, the beginning of it, or part of it, the title Actually, this is where it begins. That is actually something that that Jim told me. That's where I met Jim for the first time. We recorded a couple episodes, and that's when I was told that I was going to be going to my first national conference. And Jim, and I told him this, I told him that I always remember this every time I see him. He put his arm around me and he said, "This is where it begins, Ricardo." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Everything." And it literally was where everything started. And, you know, he and I are really good friends, as well as Ryan and stuff. And we've done many collaborations, a lot of episodes. We've done a lot of different things together, and they do excellent work. I mean, I can't say enough about it myself. So you guys are doing some excellent things. And I have to also go back really quick too and just say thank you for what you said about the movement. And I really do appreciate it. I'm very honored and humbled to be able to share all of these stories. You know, I was one of those dispatchers who buried his calls and stuff. And, you know, I learned the hard way that wasn't what I was supposed to do. And Jim actually told me in one of those episodes, early on and back in 2013, I had said something, and I don't remember what it was that I said, but I remember him saying something to the effect of, "Oh, that sounded like a cry for help." And I said, "What?" and he says, what is it that you really want?" And I think I said to him something like, I want to do more, with 911 and what I'm doing, and to be able to be there for my family." And, and I think I said after that, you know, "What the hell did you just do to me? You just did like a Jedi mind trick or something."
That's Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was also the person that, the Navigator Conference was at in Vegas last year as well. And I remember sitting at dinner with him and Ryan. And while we were sitting there, we were talking about the Imagine Listening sessions that I do. And where I have 911 dispatchers tell their I Am 911 stories, whether they say it out loud or they write it down so I can read it for them. And everyone is connecting there. You know, they're, some people are crying. You know, some are just really, the feeling in that room is really hard to explain. But you're all in there with people that come from the same place that you do and understand each story that is being told. And they're feeling it. And the emotions are high in the beginning, but the last part, we laugh our asses off with the funny stuff that happens in 911. And he goes, "Do you realize what you're doing?" And I said, "That kind of sounds bad the way you said it." and he goes, no. He goes, "This is good." He goes, "But do you realize what you've done?" And I said, "No." I said, "I guess I don't. Oh, what are you saying?" And he goes, "This is a form of peer support." He goes, you're essentially having all these people tell their most intimate stories and are able to get it out, and you're helping them." And I said, wow. I said, you know, it took him to really tell me that that's what I was doing, because I had been doing it the whole time and really didn't put two and two together that I was performing or providing a form of peer support. And that's what it's been going ever since. You know, the I'm 911 movement started as a reclassification issue. However, it quickly turned into peer support and has been going on ever since. So thank you again for the kudos, but it wasn't for all of you sharing your stories and really supporting it, it wouldn't be what it is today. So thank you for that. And I really do appreciate that. So you also sit on a board, and it's the board for the Georgia Association of Women in Public Safety. Tell me a little bit about that.
I do. It's networking, really, in a nutshell. I sit on the board with some amazing women and one male, Jonathan. little shout out to Jonathan, our male member. Let me just say that there was a girl and she had a vision. Her name is Courtney Gale, Lieutenant Courtney Gale. She's probably going to yell at me for giving her a shout out, but I don't care. she deserves it, because her vision was truly to bring all disciplines, women of all disciplines in this state, together to network, to train, to support, and and the rest of us just were, I mean, I wasn't in from the very beginning. I didn't jump on board until a little while after they started. And I was so grateful to be asked to be a part of their group, because I find myself so completely humbled anytime that I am near them, because the experience on that board is incredible. I mean, we have Courtney, who's our executive director, and a lieutenant. We have a sheriff. You know, she's incredible. And Jonathan, of course, is incredible. And we have a GBI agent, and we have a Georgia State Patrol lieutenant, and we have a crime scene investigator, and we have our firefighter deputy fire chief, or assistant fire chief. I'm going to get her title wrong. She's going to yell at me. And then we have our we have a sergeant, and then we have our private sector public safety individual, and just with amazing experience behind her. There is just the women are just incredible. And I will tell you, we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and we all have something to bring to the table. And we all represent various portions of the industry. So Jonathan and I, of course, represent 911, and we have police represented, we have fire represented, we have the private public safety industry represented, we have the sheriff's office represented, we have the state agencies represented. So, you know, we're hoping, you know, to expand more for EMS and corrections. We have had EMS and corrections personnel attend our conferences. But, you know, whether or not that gets opened on the board, I can't speak of. I don't know yet. But we truly have some amazing women. And it all started with Courtney's vision to bring them together. So one is kind of funny, because the one conference everybody, they wanted to do a little like debrief feedback afterwards. And I couldn't make the meeting. So I said, but I'm going to send you an email to my talking points, and here are the things that I think that we could do better for next year. And so so the next thing I know was like, we really liked all your feedback, and we really want you to be the conference coordinator. And I'm like, what? Okay. So that was last year was the first one, and they all got a real taste of how much I stress, but the stress fuels me, and I think they realize that eventually also. It's stress for me is not a bad thing, and I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and so we had a huge, huge successful conference last year, and then jump up to this year, and we had even more attendees come, and the atmosphere was even better, and we focused a lot on peer support this year, because last year we had a big peer support presentation, and some of the feedback we received from our attendees was more peer support. So we had quite a few sessions that were geared towards peer support, and it was just one more amazing session after another. And afterwards, we're all like, whew, we're tired, but it was a huge success. And so this coming year, our goal is to try and have some more independent training sessions and maybe even some fundraisers and start getting ready for our next year's conference.
Man, you are doing a lot.
Oh, it's definitely not me. It's a we thing for sure.
Well, yeah, for sure. But I mean, just everything that you're doing at your dispatch center and helping out on the board as well, you know, for the association, it just, there's a lot of stuff that you've got going on, and it's great. It's inspiring. It's great to hear all of this, these different things, especially with the entire peer support network. I mean, this is such a big thing right now. And, I just wonder, you know, what all is going to happen in the future, how it's going to move forward, and how it's going to help, you know, kind of balance out the fact that more technology is coming in and really fast. And the way we're talking about video messaging, you know, and pictures, all types of things that is just going to add to the workload and the amount of stress that dispatcher is going to be under. So with that said, and going into the wrap up of this episode, where do you see the power of peer support in, let's just say, 5 years?
I see us connecting across the country. I see our network, not just starting here in Georgia. I see our network connected through Jim and his organization, and you and your podcast, and the other 911 centers who are launching their peer support programs, I truly see us all connected in a very, very powerful way, especially, and I'm being very confident on this, especially after we get our professional designation.
Yes, definitely. I hear that. More and more is going to come from that.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very, very much for being on this episode. Finally, we got a chance to do this.
Yeah.
And we should do another one. We're going to have to do another one for sure.
Well, I'll be at APCO.
All right. Awesome.
Maybe we'll do it then.
I'll be there as well. Maybe we can get Ryan on there too.
That would be great.
Well, for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or if you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, that is @911podcast. You can like us on Facebook, that is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode, as always, is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. You can hear this episode, along with all the others, 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.